I'm still not sure who got what. All right. Well, you know, it's colder than usual.
Yeah, I don't know. That didn't seem like a cold issue. That seemed like a just dead air.
It did indeed.
That was strange.
All right. Well, we're live. The airwaves are humming now, huh? First order of business today is very important because I made a promise to Howard Vergalis.
Mm-hmm, you did.
To answer his trivia question because he forgot. No, it's not California, which was my guess before he told me. It is the state of Washington. So now all of you holdovers know the answer.
Which was kind of surprising. I did not expect that.
I did not either. In fact, I was the one who was so sure that I had played the odds, right, for being California, just from pure numbers and costs of things. But no, and then we had to spend a minute speculating why anyone would want to move to Washington, especially from here.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I'm not moving anywhere north of anything.
Not after, today, for sure.
Tomorrow, my God. Yeah, those poor people up in the everywhere north of, I guess, north of South Carolina, even everybody on up the coast. Hang tough, people. We used to live in that, but it's almost 30 years ago we got out of there.
Yeah, got smart in 1992, I think.
And speaking of the passage of time, I should also note that today is the last Vanwee Financial Hour of year 7.
Hard to believe.
Isn't it, though? So next week, we have the start of Vanwee Financial Hour year 8.
Time flies.
And no matter how hard I try, I can't catch up to Howard and Angela.
They've got us by a few years.
Yep. But we'll keep trying. Anyway, for the regulars, welcome back. Glad you're here, as always, because why else would we do the show? And if you're new to the show, either on purpose or by accident, we welcome you and ask you to stay the whole hour if you can. Keep your car idling or stay in your house or whatever. And you can get us at WBOB.com or on an FM radio at 101.1 AM 600 or through the app that you can download free. So there's all kinds of ways. There's no excuse to miss it. But if you have to, then you can always catch the show afterwards at VanweeFinancial.com, our website. And we have a section in there where all the shows are posted by what day? Tuesday, Wednesday?
Monday.
Get them on Monday? Okay. Mm-hmm. I never have to look because I'm here. But anyway, you can see, you can hear it in its own self, except for some of the commercials that are just taken out.
We edit out the commercials, put it out as a podcast, and you don't even have to go to a website. You can just log on to your iTunes podcasts or Spotify or any of your podcast sources and search for Vanwee. We are typically the only one that pops up. Go figure.
Yeah.
And get it that way. Automatically download it to your phone, play it on your car, on your way to work, whatever you want. It's really convenient and
no excuse.
Easy way to listen.
Good. All right. All that being said, you know, if you've been listening for a long time, that I frequently try to come up with the one-word description of the market for the past week. It's generally kind of difficult, but not today.
I used an acronym. What did you do?
I used a word. I used a proper word, a brand name. Dramamine.
Okay.
Meaning it was full of a lot of ups and downs and easy to get seasick.
I called this week TGIF. Because if it weren't for Friday, we're not looking at another. It was going to be another down week. Friday, we saw a huge spike and especially strong buying into the close. Really strong buying.
The problem we've had lately, meaning before Friday last week,
yeah,
was that selling the last hour would close. Yeah. Kill us.
Yep. And we saw a bunch of big swings during the week, up and down.
Yeah, it was just Tuesday down 1,000 and change, and
came back.
That was the other comeback, the afternoon comeback, but yep. That only made us slightly green. But if you can't hack this, folks, stay out of the market because I think we're at the new normal now called volatility.
Well, today's new normal. I hate that term, but just for now. This isn't going to.
Well, it's actually the old normal.
Yeah, it is. These days of everything going up and at a slow and steady pace, that's not realistic.
Yeah, post-2016, people have forgotten what volatility means. Well, I stand reminded. How about you?
Yeah, you know, what's funny, too, is that it's on, it's happening while a bunch of retail investors have left the market.
Mm-hmm.
They're just gone and not trading. And so, so it's interesting how you're seeing bigger swings with a lot less people trading.
But there's awful lot of pessimism out there.
There is.
Thank goodness.
I'll get to why retail investors have left the market and why we know that in a little bit. But this week we saw intraday highs that were and lows erased by the market, as it just seemed like whatever the sentiment was in the morning, it was the opposite in the afternoon. And actually, Friday, kind of with that reversal, we saw a decent week. A large cap Dow gained 1.3%, now down just 4.4% on the year. Really not terrible. The S&P ended up 0.8%, bringing its 2022 decline to 7%. And the NASDAQ, which has been really struggling under the weight of the interest rate hikes, gained just 1.6 points or 0%, but it was down.
Green.
It wasn't down.
Love that color.
It's
green.
Down 12% this month so far, in definite correction territory. It took a 417-point rally on Friday, or 3.3%, to achieve the 0% gain on the week.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. The S&P has not officially entered correction territory. We did see it trade there on Friday, but the rally brought it up above correction level. So the big question, I guess, for next week is, will we see the S&P in correction territory? And I am not willing to bet on that because I have no idea.
No, I'm willing to not take that non-bet.
All right, then. Contrary to market sentiment, and there's actually some bullish signs out there right now. You wouldn't know it by looking at the stock market, but one of them is, it's kind of funny, investor sentiment. So investor sentiment hasn't been this negative since the weeks after the COVID crash in 2020, and that puts bullish sentiment, the spread between the two, in the bottom 10% of all the readings historically. And the good thing about that is that when this happens, this coincides with the best historical returns for 1 year out of any level of sentiment. So when things get this bad and people get this negative, tends to be when the stock market does the best.
I agree.
That's just
history telling us.
That's data.
So, past performances, of course.
Exactly. It's no guarantee, but it does speak to if you follow these things, it is pretty good news.
I think there's some logic in it too when you think about it. Why are people so negative? Because the market's been going down, 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 down. That means things are a lot lower than they were not very long ago. You know, that makes them feel uncomfortable and bearish, perhaps. But it means there's bargains out there. So the people come rushing in, buy the bargains, up it goes. It makes perfectly good sense to me.
Okay, so just FYI, we're getting the 1 minute sign, but there's no music. So this is going to be an interesting intro outro situation all day, it seems. So
we'll keep an eye on it.
Uh-huh. And yeah, if we mess it up, it's not our fault.
Blame technology.
Yeah.
You said it was down. Right. I didn't know you meant it that way.
It wasn't. This is weird. We haven't had anything like this since our first show.
No, which we'll describe next week, because I always do it on the first show of the new year for shows. It was a rough start,
definitely.
Shall we say. All right, I see the countdown coming, so we're going to have to take a short break and pay some bills. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And that was a nice, friendly introduction that we weren't necessarily sure we were going to get.
Well, I can tell you this. You don't realize how much you miss it until it's gone.
Exactly. It's like a bad cold? No. Something else.
No, not like that. At all.
Like warm weather?
Sure.
Okay. We'll go with that one. All right. A little bit more about the market this past week.
Got quite a bit more, actually.
Good.
So if you need confirmation that smaller investors have had it with the market.
Excuse me a second. Yeah. I didn't give the trivia question.
Oh.
And I promise.
Okay.
Okay. Stay tuned with this interruption here. All right. Only 4 states out of 50 in D.C., 51 choices, 50 states, have more people employed today than they did pre-COVID. Name 3.
Okay.
Only four states have more people working.
We need
name
3
to win.
Okay.
All right, now back to the market. My apologies.
Okay. So if you small investors, retail investors are investors that aren't professionals. Think of your average Joe with an IRA or a brokerage account that just does their own trading, doesn't hire anyone to do it. There's, you know, millions and millions of people like this out there, and more, even more so about a year ago when a bunch of millennials jumped on Robinhood.
Users are declining in numbers sharply.
That was what I was going to talk about.
Kind of fits right with the point.
Robinhood released earnings on Thursday, and to say they were bad was kind of an understatement.
They laid a goose egg.
Last year in the fourth quarter, they posted a profit of $79 million. On Thursday night, they posted a loss for the fourth quarter of $87 million, a swing of $166 million in the wrong direction year over year. That is not good performance. The swing was largely due to small investors not buying meme stocks like GameStop and AMC, and their stock tanked. And then on Friday, it actually rallied about 10% as people bought the dip. But in overnight trading, it was down pretty bad. Robinhood, I think it's a really good bellwether of people's sentiment on the market, especially retail investors, because seeing them lose that much money based on people not doing as much trading tells me that people are fed up with the stock market or just not interested for whatever reason, bearish on it. It's a good sign. I think there should be an economic indicator around Robinhood trading revenue.
There should be.
On the other hand, Apple also released earnings on Thursday night, and they went the other direction. In fact, they had one of the best quarters a company has ever had. Their revenue was up over 11% over the same period last year, which was at that time the best quarter they had ever had. And 57.7% of that revenue came from iPhone sales, which were up 9% over the same quarter last year. And so, needless to say, Apple stock rallied on Friday. And I have to give a shout out to Chuck, who said, I think it's going to take one of the big tech companies having a really good quarter to turn this market around. And that's exactly what happened on Friday.
Well done, sir.
Yeah. So as we have said before, we think that there's going to be three rate hikes in 2022. And Fed Chairman Powell, without saying it, basically said that on this week. There was a Fed meeting. He really didn't change his stance at all. He said that the tapering will end in March, and we think that March is the logical time for a first quarter point rate hike. Now, the market disagrees. The market is pricing in 6 rate hikes over the next 12 months, and that seems a bit extreme to me. I don't think that we're going to see 6 rate hikes in the next year. In fact, I would be floored if that actually happened. The Fed never moves that quickly. So the market's sort of overreacting, in my opinion, to the inflation numbers and the fact that Fed Chairman Powell has pivoted from 0 rate hikes to some rate hikes this year.
Yeah, but his biggest mistake was pre-announcing that there wouldn't be one this year.
Yeah, that was so dumb.
I don't know what he was drinking that day, but
I don't know. Nothing
powerful.
There was a good amount of economic data released this week. The biggest number was probably fourth quarter GDP. Mm-hmm. We saw an annual growth rate in the fourth quarter. It was pretty massive, 6.9%. Estimate was 5.5, so really crushed it. Despite that huge number, a little bit of weakness under the surface. Since COVID hit in 2020, the U.S. economy has only grown at a 1.9% rate. That's slower than the pre-COVID rate. In other words, the U.S. economy is not as large as it would have been if COVID had not hit. And you can look at that one of two ways. It's either not great news or there's more room to grow in 2022.
Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You sound familiar.
Yes.
Do you look familiar?
Yes.
Oh, good. What's up today?
Yeah. Okay, I got an answer for you for your question.
Okay.
Utah, Idaho, Texas, and Arizona.
You've been doing some homework. Good for you. Did you see why I picked that particular question? I would never, ever have left out Florida, first off, although it's not one of them. And Utah and Idaho, just not places you'd normally think about.
But
it is the answer, and what the heck? Texas would have been in my first two guesses.
Yes.
And I also would have had trouble coming up with Arizona. So all in all, I thought it was a very interesting question. You want to take an off the head shot at another question that'll get you nothing?
Sure.
Good. You're a good sport. Name the states. There are five. Name any three of the five states with the most overall freedom.
Florida.
Good.
Probably Texas.
Nope.
Mississippi.
No.
West Virginia.
No. See how it gets harder, don't you? If you think about
it. Out quick.
New Hampshire. That makes sense, doesn't it?
I guess.
Live free or die.
That is their motto.
Right.
South Dakota makes sense when you think about it, because Christie's been anti-control for, well, basically the whole COVID time. And the one, Nevada, because it has a lot of freedom in general.
And all their revenue comes from tourism.
Yeah, exactly.
They had to open.
But the one that really surprised Adam, also really surprised me, is Tennessee. I don't think of Tennessee as being the overall freedom place.
No, you wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Especially with the mindset in Nashville as of late.
Yeah, it just shocked me. But you know, that's why I like questions like that. But you nailed it. You nailed it on the ones that are working. And it does also show you, there's a good underlying point in here, there are 46 states that are not yet up to the employment levels they were pre-COVID. And Adam was just talking about how the economy is not where it would have been. The problem we have right now is the people won't go back to work. That's an issue.
Still.
Yep. I got a little more on that to come later in the show, too, but... Thank you for playing and winning, and we have your address, not to worry.
Okay, have a good day.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
What do we need to know about the market going forward? That's a good question.
I think that this sell-off is overdone. I said that last week. I'll say it again this week. I think that there is a good amount of fear out there. I think some is rational. A lot is not. What if you ask yourself what's different in January than in December? There really isn't anything. Everything that we knew in December, we know in January. Yep. The Ukraine buildup was already happening. The Fed had already announced rate hikes. The tapering had already been expedited. There just isn't any new news to support the sentiment change, and therefore I think it's overdone.
Are some of these things negative?
Yeah, sure, of course.
There's always negative things out there.
Always. And that expression that the market climbs a wall of worry is true, and it remains true. And therefore, I am not getting negative on this year. And the other thing, that when you watch the news and everything that you hear on the business channels is negative, that's usually when the market does the best.
Exactly. Plus, there's one other factor going on, too, in D.C. Look at all the stuff that isn't going on in D.C.,
Yeah, that's true. And won't go on for the next 3 years.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
Some people think it's a negative. It's a good thing. Businesses love when they know the rules and they can play by them. When the rules are changing due to new laws being passed in Congress, it makes things uncertain. Businesses hate that.
All those incredible tax increases that we were
gone.
In fear of.
All gone.
Can't even talk about it now.
Nope.
Think you're going to get your unrealized capital gains taxed? Nope. Think we're going to raise the maximum bracket?
The corporate rate?
No.
Not going to happen. The death of the backdoor Roth? Not going to happen.
Right.
Just all these things that would have been negatives to personal and to businesses are all basically off the table, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Now, things like sending troops over to Europe to stage for our best buddies, the Ukrainians.
They're an ally, I guess.
Dumb as all the stuff we've done before. It's amazing how many warmongers are in D.C., isn't it?
It's a tough one. I mean, I don't like to see Putin get his way either. But do we have the stomach for another war? Probably not.
Well, personally, I don't. But I'm not going to worry about it because, quite frankly, that's not going to impact us unless something gets really bad. could happen, but there's never been a day in the market, at least when I've been involved in it, that you couldn't do a Ben Franklin balance sheet with the pros in the market on
Absolutely.
The left side and the cons on the right side.
No doubt about
and
it.
And come up with a gigantic list on both sides, and yet what's happened over time? Up, 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 up. So not to worry, folks, unduly anyway. It is a good time to pay attention to what's going on, and that involves things as easy as turning on your radio on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock and listening to our breakdown of what's happening out there. As we'll try to be upfront and we'll try to be accurate and very, very timely. That's the reason we're live. All right, we'll be right back after we pay some bills. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we are in the second half where things really get to be fun, like we haven't had any fun in the first part, right? And we'll get to a couple topics here in just a moment. But I want to remind everybody that if you have some financial questions or need some explanations, we are sitting right here at 904-222-8255. So give us a call and we will change what we're talking about to whatever you want to talk about. There's a lot to laugh about these days. Especially if you're sort of a political and financial junkie, as those of us who do this stuff tend to be. So we were enlightened this week to find out, due to the insight, I guess, of the leadership in Washington, that what really causes inflation, because let's face it, number one concern on everybody's mind right now is inflation.
Of course, yeah.
It's like 84-85% of the people say it's their number one concern.
How could it not be? It's so obvious, and it hits you every day.
Yep. But what I didn't know, and I am so happy now to have clarified, was what President Biden told us, that the cause of inflation is competition.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's big meat colluding.
Yeah. So, you know, when you drive past an armor processing plant or something like that, I want you all to stick your tongue out and give them the raspberries, because they're the ones causing inflation.
What's funny is that apparently all of these companies have been really bad at business for the last 20, 50, 100 years, and they've been needlessly lowering prices to try and get more sales for 100 years. And then this year, they decided to wisen up and get on these price increases all at the same time. It is like a chain. It's like they all went to the same MBA school at the same time and graduated.
And
with
they all learned
knowledge.
About price fixing, right?
That's right.
You know what happens when you try to do price fixing in a good competitive environment? You set those prices and somebody undercuts you.
Yeah.
And then somebody undercuts them.
Exactly. But the problem right now is these price increases are hitting them all at the same time. So their labor has gone up. Their inputs have gone up. Their grain is more expensive. Their oil is more expensive. All of these things are hitting every company. So they can't undercut prices because their costs are rising. That is the problem.
Look at the latest surveys for small business, and the problems they are having are, well, they're legion. They have the inflation going on. They have people who are in the I'm quitting generation, leaving for more money. They can't keep up. They can't get people to work. Some of them have to cut the hours of doing business.
Some of them have plants in states that are, if you have a COVID case, you have to lock down.
Exactly.
And, like, there's just so many different factors in this, and none of them are positive. And the problem with the administration is they're not doing anything about it. It's not necessarily Biden's fault that there's inflation. It's his fault that he's not doing anything about it.
Well, the administration and the Congress have to realize that they have to be incentives for people to go out to work. We have been coddling people financially for too long, and little by little these things are going away, the child tax credit for one. And, of course, I can read stories all day long about, the end of the child tax credit means child poverty is going to just explode in January. Well, get a job.
That would be one way to feed your family.
So we've got to get out of this. It was kind of the basis for the trivia questions today, talking about the size of this economy. We're not back to where we were, and it would be back there. It would be back there easily if we could satisfy demand.
Right. And instead of working to alleviate these problems, he's actually implementing policies that hurt it more.
Yeah.
And I was having this discussion last night with a very reasonable liberal about this, and we were in agreement.
Is that an oxymoron?
Sometimes. No, it's not. They do exist. They're not the ones on TV. They're the ones in real life.
I know a lot of them, actually.
Yeah. And she happens to work in healthcare. She estimates, she manages a bunch of people. She estimates that at least 40% of them are unvaccinated. Because of the Supreme Court ruling, she could lose 40% of her workforce at some point. And it's going to be devastating for her, not just for her, but for the people that she's responsible for giving care to. That's insanity. You're in a labor shortage and you're making it harder for people to work. And these are not MAGA Trumper people. These are minorities. These are women. These are just people who don't either feel the need to get vaccinated or don't trust the vaccine or whatever it is.
Who knows more than people who work?
Right.
But
the fact is they've been on the front lines with this thing. They've probably had COVID 3 times now. Yeah. They're probably more immune than all of us. And so why get a jab if you don't need it?
Data's just in on 1 year later for the natural immunity, haven't had it. And 99% of the people who've had it still have the antibodies in their body circling around. Do we know 5 years? No. Why? Because it's only been around for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So what we know now is that I don't know why it is, the distaste of government for admitting that there's such thing as natural immunity. All I can say, you can't ever go wrong when you're trying to figure out what's going on if you follow the money.
Yeah. You look at, there's an interview with Dr. Fauci where he's asked about natural immunity based on an Israeli study. No, he has no thoughts on natural immunity. He doesn't know anything about it.
No.
It's as if he's never worked in virology.
We should study that.
Yeah, that's something we should take a look at.
How many billion dollars did they give you to do this?
Really?
Meanwhile, the reason we're even talking about this is it's a direct affront to the economy, which is a direct affront to your personal economies.
Truckers in California have to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
Truckers who spend all day by themselves in a truck. By themselves. Who are they a danger to?
Can't cross the Canadian border now.
Makes no sense.
Kudos to the Canadian truckers lining up outside of Ottawa, and they intend to stick around until they get heard.
Good.
Trudeau, that apple did not fall far from the tree. For those of you old enough to remember Pierre.
Yeah, we've been saying that for a while.
Classic liberalism. And what bothers me more than that is back to your healthcare example, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed the implementation of the mandate in the healthcare area and then said, but no, you don't have the right to do it elsewhere. Hello?
I don't get it.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that. I can't put my finger on it. I hope it's not a classic case of follow the money, but who knows?
Anyways, I doubt that we will see much in the way of support from this administration in terms of rectifying these problems. But the good news is businesses will figure it out eventually. It might take more time because of these ridiculous policies, but they will figure it out. And that's another reason to be optimistic, is that if you give American businesses a set of rules, they will figure out how to turn a profit. And that has always been true. And I it's the one thing that sort of keeps my faith in the American economy.
Yeah. You have always had a situation where something gets changed or goes wrong or whatever, and we've always adapted eventually and get through it. This will be no different. I've got a topic I want to get into that's going to take a while, and we're so close to the break, I've just got a few little things to bring up, and these will be on a little lighter vein. Those of you who listen a lot know that what happened when the Social Security increase was announced, the Medicare was increased at the same time, which of course it always is, and then at the very last second, Medicare B was upped again. A second increase, and it was because of a new drug that they think is promising for Alzheimer's. And they decided that it, since it was going to be, I think it's $56,000 a year for anybody who's taking it, that they'd allow all of us who are on regular old Medicare B to pay for it. So they added another $10 and something to the Medicare B. Well, the company that makes it has just cut the price in half.
Did they cut the increase?
They're talking about it.
Really?
This is actually good news.
I'm shocked.
They're actually discussing lowering that additional increase in Medicare B, which would put money. Now, you're only affected if you know IRMA, the IRMAA, that if you make enough money that you pay the additional over the regular price of Medicare B, you're affected by this. And if you do, you know it gets really expensive. But they might actually give us back something that they never should have taken. And in my book, I'm easy enough to call that a positive. It's good news.
Yeah, so it is. We'll see if it actually happens.
Yeah, I will keep you posted. All right, we've got to take another break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. If you've got some questions, give us a ring and you will be put to the head of the line. All right, what would you think if you were thumbing through the usual bunch of garbage on the internet and come up on a story that starts out, study finds huge wealth gap in Roth IRA returns? A wealth gap in the returns on your Roth IRA. Well, here's how I'm going to ask you a question first. Who would read an article with a proclamation like this? At the aggregate level, the risk-adjusted performance of IRA plans are comparable to that of the aggregate equity market. Probably not so much. So
you lost me at the fourth word on that.
Yeah, yeah. But hang on. I'm going to try to make this a little bit of fun. Of course, you know how much we love to do that. Okay, I have to credit the authors, or I have to name the authors. Might not actually be credit by the time this is done. We'll see. Lorenzo Brecher, Ricardo Sabatucci, and Andrea Timoni. My apologies to anyone for my potentially poor pronunciation. But they had a few findings. Finding number one, lower income investors experience lower investment returns. Higher income counterparts experience higher returns. This is in the Roths. Okay, let's just throw that on the table and say it happened. Number two, the performance gap between the lower income and the higher income was greater in a Roth IRA than in a traditional IRA.
I'm struggling with how that could be true.
Oh, just hang on.
Okay.
I'll get there. Third, they were disturbed about the findings because the Roth IRA was developed by Congress, for Senator Roth, aimed at helping the middle class.
Yeah, that's
accurate. That is true, absolutely true, because not everybody cares to put money in an IRA that they can deduct when their tax rate is 0 or 10.
Or 12.
Roth was absolutely the right idea. But when I read things like that, my first impression is skepticism, as you can probably imagine. So let's start with number one, the definition of low income and high income for these three academic geniuses was, you want to take a guess what the break point was?
I mean,
annual income?
For a household, I guess, that we're talking about. Okay, so low income would have to be below 40,000.
How about 200?
What?
I'm not making this up. They defined low income households at 200,000. Below that is low income. Above that is higher income. The look on his face, folks, if you could see it, says it all.
Okay. So
now, that prompts me to ask, you guys been out of the university lately?
Seriously. So you're saying that 96% of America is low income? Okay.
You didn't know you'd lived in poverty, huh?
I had no idea.
I
just learned this.
I was thought things were okay.
Yeah, it seems pretty good.
All right, the places that they ply their trade, the London Business School, the Stockholm School of Economics, and Rutgers Business School. So apparently in those places, 200,000 it's just doggy poopy.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that you can make $200,000 in New Jersey and be okay.
Yeah. You're not getting rich. I'll give them that.
No, but you can live a comfortable lifestyle.
Yeah. All right. So let's look at their findings. The study was for the period from 2004 to 2018. And in that time, Roth IRAs for the wealthy returned 8.5% annually, whereas the low-income people received only 3.6%. That's a pretty substantial difference, I think.
Yes.
All right, the Sharp ratios. Now, for those of you who are playing the home game, a Sharp ratio is a risk-adjusted rate of return. And what you would like in a Sharp ratio is to be at 1 or better. Not always easy to get there, but their Sharp ratios for that period for the wealthy were 0.49, and the lower group had 0.32. So they're getting nothing for the risk they're taking, basically.
Weird.
I haven't quite explained that one to myself yet. When I do, I'll get to that. But their conclusion then was this was adding to wealth inequality. Bing!
Wait, no.
The light just went on.
That wasn't a conclusion. That was what they were trying to prove.
See, now you just nailed it right there. So we know now for sure that this is a bedwetting liberal paper, right? All right. They couldn't restrain themselves from mentioning who?
See where this Peter Thiel.
Yeah, very good.
Yep.
Kid's quick learner. They had to mention Peter Thiel's $5 billion Roth IRA just to prove that it adds to wealth inequality.
So the only premise that I can think of that makes sense to me for the reason for these results is that if you are extremely wealthy, you can afford more risk because you don't really care. The Roth IRA is going to be a small, small percentage of your wealth. Mm-hmm. So, and it has the best chance. It would be the best payoff if you made the most money in your Roth. So you put all your risk assets in your Roth, all your speculative bets, and one of them hits, like Peter Thiel, and you're sitting on easy street.
You're coming right to my conclusion. But there's a few more twists and turns in that road.
Okay.
All right. Another finding was that traditional IRA returns were slightly higher than Roth returns. I honestly don't have an explanation.
No, it should be the opposite. Yeah, really.
If anything, I would agree with you on that one. Further, those with incomes in excess of $1 million, their returns were about 10% a year. Mm. Okay. Now, certainly these figures.
What is that, the middle class? According to them, apparently.
Now, these figures obviously somehow are proof of something nefarious happening out there, right? Mm-hmm. We got to get to the bottom of this. All right, I call them the three amigos of the study. They claim that two kinds of plans were exploited differently by high-income investors in terms of allocations. Now, I got to back up here. We have had over our lunch table, meaning the research department and I, we have had a long discussion of what exploit means. A lot of people, when you hear exploit, immediately think negative, and a lot of other people, when you say exploit, immediately think positive. This person's exploits are legendary. Peter Thiel.
Mm-hmm.
Great one. But then again, some people come in, they exploit the poor people.
Right.
And if you look it up in dictionary.com or something,
has both definitions.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It can be used either way. So when you use that word without really describing what you're getting at, the only conclusion that I can draw is it used it on purpose. So they say that two kinds of plans were exploited differently by high-income investors in terms of allocations. I think they're probably trying to make a point. So they said that the high-income individuals invest in top-performing assets. This word is emphasized by me because it's emphasized in the writing only through their tax-free Roth IRA plans. So apparently rich people don't put risky assets in any other thing but a Roth IRA.
False.
It's stupid.
I mean, most rich people probably got there by owning a company, not in their Roth IRA.
And most of them
And that's if the riskiest really rich, thing you can do.
Yeah, the closest thing they could do to contributing to a Roth IRA is to do their backdoor Roths. And I don't think too many really, really wealthy people have time to worry about that.
No.
No. All right, so let's keep going here. All right, they say, and here, you knew this one was coming, I'm sure, if you think about it. They conclude that the performance disparity is so severe as to warrant government action.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
It's always more fun to do this in front of somebody whose facial expressions you can read. Now, did they tell us what they want to do?
Probably not.
Oh, no, no, no. They wouldn't do that.
No.
Now, I'm going to cut through this because of the music plan, but a conservative from the American College of Financial Services came back to rebut a few of those things. And he said between 100,000 and 500,000 annually, which he calls the mass affluent, which I think is a very
good
term. And he would say that they use Roth IRAs to shelter non-publicly traded assets. It's just essentially what you were saying. So there's a reason that people who are just starting out investing can't take all that much risk. And as you acquire more and more wealth and your accounts get bigger and your situation improves, then you can take more and more risk. In other words, this was a conclusion that was trying to chase a story or a story trying to chase a conclusion. Anyway, it was kind of fun. All right, we'll see you all next week for the start of year eight. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.